Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you have just joined us, welcome to Radio Islam International and welcome to the program Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zeenat. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The time right now is 2:08, and we commence this beautiful afternoon's program with Female Messiah with Sister Zakira and Salmiya, who will be joining us in a few moments, and inshallah, she is from KwaZulu-Natal, and she'll be speaking to us in a few moments. That'll be followed by Health Matters, and today, inshallah, we focus on nutrition and, you know, can it be a solution during and after menopause? We'll also be looking at fruit, whether fruit is bad for women with PCOS, that is polycystic ovarian syndrome. Inshallah, all of this happening a little later in the program, but for now we're going to be crossing over to KwaZulu-Natal. We're going to be speaking to Sister Zakira and Salmiya. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Zakira, how are you this afternoon?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Tazinat, I'm well, alhamdulillah, and yourself?
Alhamdulillah, it's wonderful to have you with us on the show again. And we're not going to waste much time, so you can get in as much as you possibly can for today. You can continue with Female Messiah.
Jazakallah khairan, Fazinat. And yes, it's always a pleasure joining you on the show. So, my dear listeners, we basically left off last week on the issue of discharge. And alhamdulillah, I think we mostly covered that one. And I'm not sure if you remember, but in the first program, which was in the middle of July, we said that as soon as August starts, inshallah, we're going to be doing Qurbani and Hajj Masail. So as we've promised, we're going to deliver today, and inshallah, we're going to start with the Qurbani and Hajj Masail. So before I even do the Mas'ala that I want to do today, I want to say that I know that many of the Hujjaj who were leaving have already left. It's just basically the last lot perhaps that are leaving for the 3-week Hajj that are still around and will probably be leaving by Monday or something like that. But we are going to be discussing some Hajj Masail either way, and the reason for that is because anyone who may still be intending to do an Umrah later on, or just for your own personal knowledge as well, or if you have someone in the kingdom that's going through a similar situation that we're discussing, then you could, let them know, or, yeah, whatever it may be. But that's the whole purpose for discussing Hajj Masail, even though, as we fully know, many of the Hujjaj have probably left for their journey of Hajj already. So, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Today, the Mas'ala we are discussing is the Mas'ala with regards a sister who has reached Madinatul Munawwara, mashallah, and she's been there for a while, and now she starts bleeding. Now, I know that many of the sisters that go try and take some form of contraception, or they try and do the primulet pills. These are all things that they hope will help them to try and regulate the haid so that they do not get their haid during the 6 weeks or the 4 weeks or the 5 weeks of Hajj that they are there. But now what happens at times is that because our bodies are so used of, getting rid of the lining, or, shedding the lining of the womb at that time of the month, which in essence is the period, the haid, what happens is that even though we take some form of contravention, something to keep away the haid comes on anyway. And sometimes it may not come on during the exact dates that you think it's going to come. So you may normally get your haid around the 20th. So when it doesn't come on the 20th, you think like, oh, this is so good. Alhamdulillah, the tablets are working. And then when you come around the 27th or something like that, maybe a week later, you start spotting. Spotting meaning you know that this is the color, the flow, all of that you normally get your hair is. Or even if it may not be the color and flow that you normally get your hair is, it's spotting which the consistency and the amount and the color is all something that is considered haid, right? So now, what is this? How do I consider what's happening? How do I consider this bleeding? What do I consider it as? My dear sister, this is what we call breakthrough bleeding in gynecological terms, and according to the Sharia, all breakthrough bleeding is also considered haid. So in essence, even though you've taken the medication to keep away your haid, this breakthrough bleeding that you are experiencing is actually your haid, and you cannot go to the masjid now. If you're in Madinatul Munawwara, Masjid al-Nabawi, if you're in Makkatul Mukarramah, Masjid al-Haram, you cannot go to the masjid, and you need to, obviously no Salah, no Quran, all of that, right? So, what does the sister do in this case? Really quickly, to wrap up and explain this mas'ala to you, because this is the only mas'ala we're going to be discussing today regarding the breakthrough bleeding. What you can do, my sister, and a very distraught sister sent me a message last week sometime speaking about something like this. She says, tomorrow we're going to Makkatul Mukarramah for Umrah, and you know, I was so excited about it, and like, today I got my haid, now what must I do? So what you're going to do is, you're going to still get into the ihram as normal, and you're going to go with everyone else to Tanai Masjid Aisha. You're going to go there, you're going to put from the hotel, you're going to take a shower like everyone else, put on your ihram and go there. But when you get there, when everybody is performing their two rakats and making their niyyah, obviously you're not going to be able to perform your two rakats. So you're going to make your niyyah anyway and leave there with the rest of the group. When you get to Makkatul Mukarramah, you're going to remain in your hotel while everyone goes and performs their umrah. And during the days while you are there, if you'd like to change your garments every day, take a shower and change into a different set of clothes, that's all absolutely permissible. The only thing is that you will not use any scented soap, any scented shampoos. When you're undoing your hair and neatening it again, you won't use a comb or a brush. You'll just neaten it with your hands. These are the type of things, right? But changing your garments is absolutely fine, because what we sometimes tend to forget that ihram is not the clothing. Ihram is the state that you are in. And then, when it comes to the time when your haid has now completed, now you will take a shower again, no scented soap, no scented perfume, no scented lotion, sorry. And then you will make your way to the haram, you will perform your two raka'at there of tahiyatul umrah, and you will go and perform your tawaf and perform your sa'i. If you, your husband, brother, whichever mahram you are with, he wants to join you when performing the tawaf, by all means he can make niyyah for tawaf, you're going to make niyyah for umrah, and you can perform the tawaf together. When it comes to the sa'i, if he just wants to perhaps keep you company and remain in that area, read some Quran or something like that while you perform your seven circuits, alhamdulillah, even that is absolutely fine. And then mashallah, you're done with your umrah. So as much as yes, it may feel a little bit, oh, now I need to do it on my own and all of that, do not feel despondent if you are in Makkatul Mukarramah and Madinatul Munawwarah and you happen to experience your haid, and you know you've taken some pills or whatever as some contravention and it hasn't worked. Because keep one thing in mind, my dear sister. You have been granted the opportunity to go when many of us would trade places with you at the heartbeat, right? So wherever you are, doesn't mean that only because you can't go to the haram now, there's nothing for you to do. No matter where you are in Makkatul Mukarramah and Madinatul Munawwarah, your du'as are still most readily accepted. So inshallah, keeping this in mind and keeping the sanctity of the place that you are in mind and the sanctity of your journey, do not lose hope. And with that, inshallah, I'd like to round this discussion off. Inshallah, next week we'll continue from there discussing a few more laws of the female while she's in the state of ihram and on the journey of hajj. Jazakallah khairah, Fazinat, until we speak again next week. Fi amanillah, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam. Jazakallah khair, Sister Zakira, for all that information. We certainly do appreciate it, and I'm sure our listeners out there may also be listening into the program, inshallah, and alhamdulillah, it'll be of benefit to them. Jazakallah khair, and remember, if you do have any questions, any female masail questions, please feel free to send it through to ZA@radioislam.co. Or rather, za@radioislamlive.com, and inshallah, Sister Zakira will answer them for you in our next program, inshallah. Jazakallah khair. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll be continuing with our program, Family Health Matters. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Well, welcome once again to Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zainat, and today we're going to be looking at nutrition during and after menopause, and can it actually be a solution? So we also want to look at how consuming the right foods can have a powerful effect on menopausal symptoms. So I'm going to be sharing some information that I came across, and I thought this was so interesting, and it will definitely benefit our listeners out there, inshallah. Okay, so have you ever wondered why you are so moody that time of the of your life? Well, nutritional support during and after the menopause can be beneficial in two ways. We're going to be talking about how food can actually help. Right, so they say it's beneficial in two ways, and that is by decreasing the symptoms such as those dreaded symptoms as hot flushes and moodiness, and also by preventing the disease associated with the stage of life. So it works in two ways. Now, you know, for many women, the menopause can be a turning point, not only, physically, but psychologically as well. Now, because of this, the first step is to manage the menopause is to keep a positive outlook. Now, you know, I think the big problem comes because we as women, we start, long before you even go into menopause, you start thinking of it and you think, oh my God, we have such negative thoughts about it. We already thinking so bad about it. You know, we so negative about it. Instead of learning how to manage and how to, accept this, I think it's a part of our lives. We need to accept this first and foremost. But the thing is, we have such bad thoughts about it. So, you know, even when the time comes, instead of us managing it and coping with it, we end up hating it and we make it a big problem. Yet they say that we need to be very positive about it, and we need to learn to manage the situation. This is something that's going to happen to us, whether we like it or not. It's a part of, a stage in our life that we as women have to go through. Now, menopause is not a disease. I think that is one of the things we need to understand. It is a natural phase of life, and with a proper diet, nutritional supplements, and exercise, most of the unpleasant side effects can be minimized and also, eliminated. So we can actually get away with all of these. We can, have a normal phase that it'll come and it'll go. It'll just be one of those things that we have to go through. And we know as women, we go through so many stages in our lives. So this will just be one of those stages that we have to go through. But I think we think so much about it, we put so much of importance on it that we actually start dreading it coming. And when it does come, we've already made up our mind that it's going to be a bad phase in our lives. And that's how it ends up, because we're thinking that way all the time. Well, so we need to get used to the idea that at one stage or the other, it's going to come. We cannot wish it away, but we need to learn how to deal with the situation. Now, let's see what menopause actually is. It's just basically hormonal changes that takes place. Now, they say the menstrual cycle is controlled by a sequence of hormones that are produced in the hypothalamus, that is in the brain, the pituitary gland, and also the ovaries. Now, when the level of one hormone increases, the level of the other hormones decrease, and this is known as the negative feedback mechanism. With the decline in estrogen and progesterone levels leading up to the menopause, The negative feedback mechanism results in more follicle-stimulating hormones, that is known as the FSH, and the other hormone, which is LH, being secreted. Now, high levels of FSH and LH can disturb many aspects of a woman's metabolism, including brain chemistry, your mood, thyroid dysfunction, bone strength, lipid metabolism, and blood sugar levels. So it does. There's a lot of changes that are taking place in your body at that time of your life, and it can obviously play a little bit of havoc with you. Your moods, your bone strength, lipid metabolism, the blood sugar level. You know, it's just something that happens to us at that time. Now, they say during premenopause, estradiol is the main estrogen, and it is synthesized in the ovary. Following menopause, estrone takes over as the main estrogen. It is produced in fat cells and muscles, and it is biologically less active than the estradiol. This then can manifest as an excess of male hormones, and this also, the visible signs would be that you will end up with more facial hair, more thinning of the hair on the head, and a tendency to put on weight around the waist and the abdomen. And sometimes one wonders, like, you know, when you come to this time, this age, why are you picking up weight when you never did pick up weight at all? But it's all because of all these changes that are happening in your body. The gradual reduction in estrogen during the menopause is believed to cause many of its symptoms, such as anxiety, depression, dry hair, forgetfulness. You end up with lots of headaches, hot flushes. I think that is the most common one. Insomnia. You can't believe how all this is happening to you. Thinning of the hair. You feel very tired and lethargic. Back pain. Soreness in your muscles. Of course, another important one and a very common one is abdominal bloating. Dry vagina, loss of libido, and of course another very important one is the urinary urgency. You wonder what has happened to you? Well, all that is happening to you is that you are in a menopausal phase. Okay, so now let's look how nutrition can actually help during this period of time. Firstly, we want to look at what things you should increase and what things you should be having less of. Okay, so let's start off with nutrition first. Now, the digestive tract becomes less efficient with age. This generally does happen. While metabolism and chemical reactions actually slow down, so we are getting older, and all of these things are going to be happening to us. Although fewer calories are needed, the body requires the same amount of vitamins and minerals. Right, so consuming the right foods can have a powerful effect on menopausal symptoms, enabling the body to adjust to changing hormone levels. So what you eat, how you eat, what you eat, when you eat, what kinds of food you eat, it will make a big difference. The healthiest diet during this time is a new, or rather not a new one, the healthiest diet during this time is one that is low in refined carbohydrates and sugar, but it is high in whole grains, vegetables, fruits, seeds, nuts, seafood, lean meats, and fish, with some oil and the occasional egg. So, yes, this is important for us to remember. We should, the healthiest diet during this time, obviously, is going to be one that is low in refined carbohydrates and sugar. So we need to cut down on those things. But things like your whole grains, your seeds, your nuts, vegetables, all these things that I mentioned just now, those are things that you can have enough of. Obviously, you have to cut down on some of the oils and, of course, your eggs a little bit as well. Then you also need to increase your fiber. And, you know, now I'm going to look at some of the things that you need to increase on. And the one, of course, which is so important, which you actually do have to do as well, is you need to increase in fiber. Now, your fiber is essential for maintaining a healthy gut, very important that, and normalizing intestinal transit time. So your gut plays a very important role all the time, every time. But at this time, it plays an even more important role. It can therefore help reduce menopausal symptoms like gas and bloating. It also helps control blood glucose levels and, of course, your appetite. Right. Then you need eating a high-fiber diet decreases the risk of many cancers. We all know that, including bowel and breast cancer. High-fiber foods would include things like beans and lentils, you know, all your green leafy vegetables, your nuts, seeds, and whole grains. So let me just go through those things again. High-fiber foods would include your beans, lentils, green leafy vegetables, nuts, seeds, and whole grains. And things like, so your high-fiber diet is very important. Remember that. And if you have a high-fiber diet, it will help, you know, prevent cancers. And, of course, the important one is bowel cancer and breast cancer. Okay, then another thing that you need to increase on is good fats. Now, firstly, saturated fat, which is found mainly in dairy products, meat, and processed foods. These are actually very dangerous for menopausal women because it is linked to heart disease, strokes, high blood pressure, cancers, and obesity. So we need to avoid saturated fats because it is not good for you. Then the essential fatty acids, which is known as EFAs, they are now found in nuts, in seeds, and in oily fish, and it can help reduce cholesterol and also protect against heart disease. And some signs of EFAs deficiency would be dry skin, lifeless hair, cracked nails, depression, dry eyes, aching joints, difficulty in losing weight, and in breast pain. These are all typical menopausal symptoms. So you see all of this happening to you during the menopause. So if this happens, then you need to know that you need to, you know, just increase on your essential fatty acids, which are found in the things that I mentioned, like nuts and seeds and oil fish, and, you know, it'll help you, inshallah. Right, then another thing to do is to look at the increase in phytoestrogens. Now, phytoestrogens are weak estrogenic compounds. They are actually present in plants and structurally similar to human estrogen. Now, while they are not as strong as regular estrogen, they may have a balancing effect on the body, diminishing some of the discomforts caused by lower estrogen levels during menopause. Phytoestrogens have also been studied extensively for their cholesterol-lowering effect. It is thought that they can have protective effects in terms of heart disease, which are important both during and after the menopause. And, yeah, a wide variety of fruits, that is strawberries, apples, tomatoes, and grapefruit. Then vegetables, which are garlic, asparagus, broccoli, sweet potatoes, and plant proteins like lentils, chickpeas. These are all good sources. Then flax seeds contain more phytoestrogens than any other plant sources, but they say, you know, flax seed needs to be ground. You know, you have to grind it, and it will be more effective. So basically, you know, these are some of the phytoestrogens that you can use. And, of course, these are found in fruits. They are found in vegetables. and also flaxseed, alhamdulillah, that is very good for you too. But flaxseed should be used grounded. Okay, now we're going to take a short break. When we return, we're going to look at some of the things that we need to reduce, you know, to make your symptoms much less effective, inshallah. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a few moments.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the program Family Health Matters. I'm your sister Zenith, and we're continuing with the program that we started earlier. It's all about nutrition, whether it can be a solution during and after menopause. Now, we spoke a little about hormonal changes, nutritional consuming, you know, nutrition and consuming the right fruits and its effect on menopause, menopausal symptoms. We also looked at increasing fiber, good fats, phytoestrogens. We're now going to look at things that we need to decrease on, or rather reduce. And some of the things we're going to be looking at is carbohydrates, refined carbohydrates, sugars, and caffeine, inshallah. We also want to look at supplements and how important supplementation actually is at that time. Okay, so let's look at what kind of foods that one can actually reduce on to make you feel a bit better during that time of, you know, during menopause and also after menopause. So let's look at carbohydrates, refined carbohydrates and sugars. They say refined carbohydrates such as white bread and many processed foods are actually low in essential nutrients and enzymes. And together, these foods diminish the effect of many healthy foods by depleting vital nutrients. For example, calcium, which is essential for bone health. And at this time, you need to actually be very, you know, more aware of your bone health, and especially after the menopause. Yeah, so calcium actually is essential for bone health, and sugar actually not so good. So you need to get rid of sugar as well. So deplete sugar as well. So no carbohydrates. You know, you need to cut down on that and sugar. Then the next one is obviously alcohol, which wouldn't affect us in any way. But then we go to the next one, which is caffeine, to reduce caffeine. And caffeine can be particularly bad for the... We're just going to take a short break. We have a bit of a problem with the mic right now. We'll be back in a few moments. Please do stay tuned.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We do apologize for that. We just had a bit of a problem with our mics. But alhamdulillah, I think this one seems to be okay. Okay, so we continue. Another thing that we need to reduce on is caffeine. And they say that caffeine can be particularly bad for menopausal women. It causes what? Constriction of blood vessels. And it also, you know, it elevates your body temperature, and of course that then leads to all those hot flushes that we normally suffer from. Because it is a diuretic, it may also deplete essential trace elements like magnesium, calcium, and zinc. Now, while cutting down on caffeine, increase fiber and water to reduce the risk of constipation. Now, sometimes, you know, we are so used to having our teas and coffees and whatever else. And if we don't have that, then we don't have anything else. But we need to then increase our fiber and our water. And the reason for this is to reduce the risk of constipation. Right, so basically those are the things that you really need to reduce on. So it would be the refined carbohydrates and sugars. We need to also reduce on our caffeine. And like I said, of course, alcohol doesn't affect us in any way. Okay, so now we go on to the next one, and that is the importance of supplements. They say a very good quality multivitamin and mineral combination should actually form the foundation of your supplementation program. So it is important. Of course, if you don't know, please don't just go and do anything that you think is right. You need to consult your doctor just to make sure that you are using the right you are taking the right supplementation and you are not over, you're not going to overdose yourself in the process. Right, so plum, you need to, they say since all essential nutrients are dependent on each other for utilization. So let's look at what we actually need. Firstly, you need calcium. They say calcium becomes particularly important during the menopausal transition. Declining estrogen levels leave bones without the protective bone building properties of this hormone. So in turn, susceptibility to thinning bones and the risk of osteopenia and osteoporosis increase. This time, this is the time where you, where many people actually starts, you start getting osteoporosis and you need to be very careful about that. However, it is essential to take a calcium supplement that contains other vitamins that are needed for proper utilization of calcium in the bone. And that, for example, would be vitamin D and vitamin K. Okay, so calcium that also has vitamin D and vitamin K. So please check all your labels before you take any of these supplementations. And even better is to check with your medical practitioner before you take anything. The other thing is magnesium. Now they say magnesium enables body to metabolize calcium, therefore preventing osteoporosis. It also helps with hormonal problems such as mood swings and breast tenderness. And they say lack of magnesium is also implicated in insomnia. Right, so magnesium is also important for you to, maybe you do get some, I'm not sure. You need to always check with the chemist. Your chemist would be able to advise you correctly too. Or better still, please check with your medical practitioner. Then you need vitamin E. Now, vitamin E is considered an effective antioxidant, which means that it also helps keep cells healthy and, of course, disease-free. It may relieve mild symptoms like those, the hot flushes and the night sweats, and it is effective in relieving vaginal dryness when applied topically or taken as a supplement. So vitamin E is also very important at this stage. And then vitamin B complex. Now, the vitamins, the B vitamins are particularly helpful during the menopause, with low levels leading to emotional distress, fatigue, and irritability. And they are essential for blood sugar balance and brain function. So that plays a very important role. Please make sure that you do get some kind of vitamin B in. Then the other one is the 5-hydrotryptophan, hydroxytryptophan. It's also, in short, it's known as the 5-HTP. Now, 5-HTP is an amino acid that is the intermediate step between tryptophan and the brain chemical serotonin. Serotonin, as we all know, is the happy, the hormone that makes you happy. So if taken in combination with several cofactors such as vitamin B6 and B12, it can be converted into serotonin in the body. And low serotonin levels are associated with symptoms such as migraine, anxiety, depression, and insomnia. However, the 5-HTP should only be taken under the supervision of a qualified healthcare professional. So basically, please remember this. This is very important that you always consult your doctor when you're taking even a supplement. You know, sometimes we just go to the chemist and we pick up something on the shelf and we think, okay, this is it. I'm going to be using this now. It's what I need. Please don't do that. If, consult with the chemist. If it's not the right thing, then make sure that you speak to your doctor about it so that they know what you are taking and what you are taking is correct. Or even take it to the doctor with you so that they can check the ingredients and tell you whether this is good for you or not. Well, finally, nutritional support during the menopause can be beneficial in two ways. They say by decreasing symptoms associated with menopause and by preventing the diseases associated with it. And finally, eating well and using nutritional supplements when needed can really reduce symptoms by helping to provide the vitamins, the minerals, and the enzymes essential for energy and healthy body. So basically, what we really want is a healthy body at all times. So, and also remember that we need to be very positive and know how to manage this phase in our lives, inshallah, and Allah will make it easy for each and everyone out there. It's really not so bad, you know, if you, it's just that I think what we do is we've already decided that it's going to be a bad period in our lives, and you know, it automatically just ends up being a bad period. But I think we can make it a happy period and, you know, just be positive and eat right, eat well. Inshallah, Allah will make it. And of course, with the right supplementation, it will be an easy time. And before you know it, it's over. Inshallah. Well, listeners, we're going to take a break now. When we return, I still want to talk a little about something else. You know, it's something that many women actually ask when they do go to a, you know, a dietitian. They always want to know whether fruit is bad for women with PCOS, that is polycystic ovarian syndrome. So stay with us. We'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the Family Health Matters. Now, we spoke about nutrition during and after menopause and, you know, can it be a solution? Alhamdulillah. We're now going to be looking at another condition called polycystic ovarian syndrome. Now, there's a very important question that I came across, and I thought, you know, let me share this information with you. The question that they know women with PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome rather would always ask, you know, dietitians is whether, you know, fruit is good for them or whether it's not so good for them. So let's see what the answer to that is. It's a very common question that they say it is, you know, is fruit bad for me if I do have polycystic ovarian syndrome, that is PCOS in short. Well, true, fruit does contain carbohydrates, and a diet too high in carbs isn't good for women with PCOS, or most people for that matter, actually not for all of us. But the sugar in the fruit isn't the same as regular old table sugar, you know, the ones that we just, the sugar that we use. In fact, comparing the two is like, well, comparing apples to oranges. Now, plain sugar, like the kind you put in your coffee or you use to sweeten your oatmeal, is actually called sucrose, a carbohydrate that is an easily digestible form. Now, when you eat sugar, it quickly enters your bloodstream, giving you a sharp rise in your blood sugar and insulin levels. Now, not good when you have PCOS. This is actually not good for you then. Fruit, on the other hand, is composed of a different carbohydrate, and this is called fructose. Fruit also contains fiber, which needs to be broken down by the body in order to use the fructose for energy. And this means it takes your body longer to digest the fruit. Think of the difference between an apple picked from a tree and a half glass of apple juice. Both have the same amount of carbohydrates. Now, which would satisfy you more, the apple or the juice? Right, I would think the apple would, but let's carry on. Besides the added benefit of fiber, fruit contains the very vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants that can improve PCOS and insulin resistance and lower our risk for chronic diseases like cancer. In fact, the U.S. dietary guidelines actually recommend we eat a minimum of 2 cups of fruit each day for good health. That's 2 cups of fruit for good health each day. Now, when we talk about a serving of fruit, what are we talking about? Do we know how much one serving is? let's see what counts as a serving of fruit. Firstly, if you're having an apple, you just need to take one apple, one small apple, not a big apple. So one serving of apple would just be a small apple, or perhaps one cup of grapes, not a whole big bunch like we normally would. One orange, not two, three oranges. One large peach. One cup of strawberries. And if those strawberries are sweet, we can actually finish that whole, little punnet of strawberries would be nothing. So, but we only need one cup of strawberries. That would be equal to one serving. One cup of cherries would be equal to one serving of fruit. You can have two small plums and half of a large banana. So if the bananas are large, then you only have half of it. That would be equal, or maybe just one small banana. That would be equal to one serving. Now, because fruit is a carbohydrate, they shouldn't be eaten all at once. You know, don't have an apple and a banana and strawberries and everything together at one go. A common problem is that people think that their smoothie is good for them when they have included several servings of fruit in one serving. Actually, that is not a good idea. Too many carbohydrates eaten at once, even if they come from fruit, will spike glucose and insulin levels. Instead, have a piece of fruit as a snack or add to a meal that is low in carbohydrates, for example, strawberries with perhaps, and if you're having breakfast, you can have an omelette with strawberries. I mean, an omelette, and you can have your one serving of fruit, which would be your strawberries. And then fruit doesn't contain protein or fat. So you may want to add some to increase the satiety and help manage blood sugar levels. Examples would include an apple with nut butter or hard-boiled egg or cheese. So your one apple would be your one serving, and then you can have it with nut butter or hard-boiled egg or with cheese. Now, generally, fruit that you eat, the skin, that is your apples or your peaches or your berries, tend to have a low glycemic index. And this means that it gets digested slower and will result in a slower rise in your glucose and insulin levels after eating. Now, fruits that you don't eat the skin with, that is the pineapple perhaps, or melon or watermelon, tend to have a higher glycemic index because they don't contain as much fiber. This doesn't mean these fruits are bad for you, but they still contain nutrients. But you should be eating this in moderation. And, you know, if you're having watermelon or even pineapple or melon that is really sweet, I think we sometimes go overboard and we have so much of it. So we need to be careful with regards to this. And what about bananas, you may ask? Well, a large banana counts as two servings of fruit, like eating two apples at once. Buy smaller bananas or the baby bananas, or cut one regular-sized banana in half. Bananas are rich in potassium, which regulates blood pressure, and they are a good source of vitamin B vitamins, which help maintain blood sugar levels. So just a few more tips that I would like to share with you to help you eat more fruit is to keep a bowl of whole fruit on the table or counter. You'll be more likely to see if it's in sight rather than hidden away in the fridge or the refrigerator. So, you know, cut up your fruits, but remember, don't mix your fruits. You know, I think we love to make our fruit salad. I think that is not a very good idea. So, you know, just keep your fruits cut up and separately. Buy fresh fruit in season to maximize the nutrients from different types. Refrigerate cut-up fruit to store for later or for easy access. Freeze fresh fruit or buy frozen to blend in a smoothie. Once again, remember, keep them separately and then enjoy for snacks. Add to meals, for example,
you know, top your oatmeal with blueberries or add grapes or apples to a salad. Well, listeners, that's all I can share with you today. But remember, you can make the best choices for fruit based on the diet you are following. If you have PCOS or perhaps even diabetes, you may want to consult your doctor or registered dietitian to help you design an eating plan that incorporates fruit appropriately. However, when you are limiting sugar, fruit is a better choice for a sweet craving than reaching for a sugary snack, as long as you keep portions in mind. Remember those portions. It's small and it's one only. Well, Jazakallah khair. I hope you've enjoyed the program today, and inshallah that it will be of benefit to you. With that, we come to the end of this program today. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and Jazakallah khair to our engineer. Assalamu alaikum.